I think last episode was 81 in one of your hotel rooms, Jörn. You know which hotel?
Yeah, it was the Marriott in Berlin.
So.
Now we're not in a hotel.
No.
Now we're in your cozy little office in Berlin.
Yes. Yep.
Thank you for having us here.
Absolutely. Happy you guys can make it. I know it's been a long trip, but let's see.
Yeah. How's life, Jörn?
You know, has many different phases.
Ups and downs, so, rights and lefts.
Some things are good. Other things are not so good. But yeah, no, generally we're in good spirits and, you know, we're enjoying our time, still trying to do the best we can. And yeah.
What's your favorite thing you're working on right now?
My tan.
Your tan. No, your tan lines.
No. We have a number of things going on, and, you know, all of them are actually quite special, I have to say, because all of them are things that we haven't really previously done like this. So, you know, we're working on a bank right now.
So that's cool. Bunch of new stuff. So,
yeah, that's a bunch of really new stuff. Very interesting. We're working on a long stay concept, which is also new for us. And we're working in some regions that we haven't worked in before in Germany, which is also interesting. So everything is new right now. So everything is, you know, quite
exciting. So it feels
exciting.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You have to learn new dialects as well, or
no?
For the region?
No, I don't do dialects.
That's a challenge. Learning new dialects.
Yeah. No, we're not doing that.
No. Okay. But new regions, but no, not new countries for you.
No, not new countries. No. No.
So talking about hotels, because just mentioned working for a bank, it's completely different, or are there any similar, any?
No, it's different. I mean, they have different requirements, you know, of different ways of decision making, you know, also different ways of looking at things, really, you know. Some things sound very similar in the beginning, but they turn out not to be. Mm-hmm. Other things sound very similar, but turn out to be very similar, just have a different name. So, you know, it's very interesting. You know, they also have quite involved processes, you know, with their employees, which is very different from most hotel projects, mm-hmm. even though everybody right now is, you know, very eager to point out, you know, how much they appreciate their employees and how much they do for them and, you know, give them badges for all types of things, which is great. You know, with the bank people, I mean, they're really concerned about their employees, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So they, you know, go all out making sure, you know, their work environments are just so and, you know, all every possible norm and whatever else is adhered to, and they're very much participating in the process of decision making, mm-hmm. which is a little bit challenging from our end, but quite interesting to observe. Mm-hmm.
But before we go on talking about hotels, how do you approach a bank nowadays? Because, I mean, bank subsidiaries, aren't they actually closing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't, you know, really keep track of that type of thing, but I think there's different banks that probably have different approaches to, you know, what they feel their strength is in terms of the customers that they're serving. I'm sure there are a lot of banks that are actually closing branches.
Yeah, like a bank concept is not a bank anymore as we know.
Right, because they want to cut down on costs and, you know, all these types of things and all trying to go digital. But I think obviously there's other banks who, you know, see a lot of their business in maintaining, you know, personal relationships with clients. I also think it's a little bit of a question of, you know, location, number one, and also you know, the type of customer that you're serving, you know,
yeah.
the type of business you're looking to generate. You know,
yeah.
I think it's one thing to have the people run around with an app so they can get money, you know, most conveniently. It's a different, you know, customer community that you're serving when you're, you know, handing out loans, like business loans. And if that's core to your business. You know, I think it makes a lot of sense to, you know, bring the people back into a building.
They started like creating the bank lobby, like a coffee house.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, all of that is part of what we're doing there. And like I said, you know, it's very interesting. It's a super
different approach.
You know, it's a super pretty building and very engaged people, you know, on the client side. So it really is quite interesting. Yep.
So coming back to the hospitality industry, what's up in the
hotels
market?
I've been trying to figure that out.
On your side.
On our side, right. I mean, look, it's I don't need to tell anyone. You know, it's the times have changed. Business has evolved, and conditions have you know, generally not improved in the real estate sort of industry overall, and specifically in the hotel industry as well. You know, one of the most telling things that I have observed recently is that everybody's reporting revenue, nobody's reporting profit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everybody's making more money, but on the revenue side, but you know, it doesn't stick because you know the costs are obviously increasing much faster and higher than the revenues do. And obviously in the long term, you know, that's a problem, right? And of course, you know, I think like most people, you see this in the projects, you know, you see it in what's happening in, how long decisions are taking. You know, you see it in the fact that, sooner or later, most projects run into some sort of financial shenanigans, you know, there's some sorting out that needs to happen. Oftentimes that means, you know, there's going to be programming changes or there's going to be quality changes, or sometimes there's operator changes. And that kind of thing is what happens on a day-to-day basis right now, you know, and that didn't really used to be the case like that. So that's the environment we're in right now. And, you know, keeps it interesting. But, you know, every now and then also quite challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you're observing these changes after the pandemic or?
Yeah, I mean, whether it's strictly related to the pandemic, I'm sure it is somewhere, but I'm not enough of a sort of financial whiz that I can kind of really, you know, draw a straight line from A to B to C. But I mean, it's, you don't need to be a magician to sort of see the connections, right?
Mm.
I mean, if there's no real estate deals, nothing's being sold or bought, you know, there's not going to be any sizable new projects. Mm. Nothing's being built because nobody gets a loan for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of those things mean there's going to be less projects, you know. And yes, and the projects that exist are mainly, you know, sort of refurbishment projects where people really need to do something or where they can capitalize on events that are on the horizon. You know, as we all know, everything has become very much event driven, you know, be it concerts or be it major sports events or, you know, what have you. That's really providing the big impact in most markets. You know, just take the incredible, you know, summer of entertainment in Munich that's just sort of wrapped up. I mean, you know, these people just went from strength to strength to strength, right? Because they had incredible entertainers come and fill all these, you know, concert halls, but they've also discovered—
They even built concert halls, huh?
Yeah, but they've also discovered that the type of customer guest that who comes, you know, they don't spend quite the same way, obviously, than, you know, the people who come to spend vacation.
What would have revenue been without Adele in Munich?
Well, I mean, nobody knows, right? But I mean, I don't even know how much money they actually make as projections. But the point is that the nature of the projects that are currently out there have changed, you know, mainly, again, to, you know, refurbishments or reflags, you know, where, you know, one operator takes over from the other because everybody's, you know, after growth. So that's what's out there right now. And increasingly, these things happen very quickly. You know, so you have one day, you look at a particular property and it's a has name X, and you know, a week later you look at it has, you know, name Y on it, and all of a sudden you start realizing, you know, well, I guess the difference between those two brands wasn't actually that big, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
still the same property, right? So yeah, that's the nature of business right now, you know.
But have like the rules and categories changed? For example, one of your favorite topics, sustainability rules, or like categories, well, referring to quality and costs and et cetera?
I mean, I don't know that they've really changed. I would say that, you know, on the subject of sustainability, I mean, I think you were part of that conversation, actually, that we
yes,
had
that's why.
not too long ago. And I mean, our experience with that is that everybody wants it. Nobody wants to pay for it. You know, mm-hmm. that's, at least in our experience, that's the case everywhere, basically. You know, so is anyone really going to go out and make major changes to a project, to, you know, accommodate this or that, you know, ESG requirement? Not so much.
But is that a local issue, or is it a like Central European issue, or is it an international issue?
I don't know. I mean, I would venture to say it's an international issue. I don't really have the data to mm-hmm. sort of back that up. That's just, you know, anecdotally. But the thing is that everybody knows, like in Europe, you know, these requirements are going to come down the line, and it's going to at some point cause problems. People know that. You know, there's the there's rules, you know, financial rules and ESG related rules that are going to come down the pipeline, and they're going to bite at some point. And for financing, and you know, you're going to have to meet those goals. But even though everybody right now is still trying to get away without complying,
mm-hmm.
because it's raising costs right now. And right now, the name of the game is, you know, how can I get the best for the least? That's true for pretty much everything. You know, that's not only true for, you know, ESG related items, but, you know, anything really, you know, be it FF&E, be it, you know, MEP improvements or whatever, what have you, you know, it's the same everywhere, basically. Yeah.
So in the end, the quality is not the same as before.
No, I don't think it is. I mean, I think you see a lot of effort on, you know, reducing cost. Let's put it that way. The quality that you get for it is not always related to the cost. I mean, let's be clear about that. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, we've seen a lot of things happen where there were enormous amounts of money spent on something, and what you ended up getting was, you know, a heap of crap, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and everybody wondered how that happened. I got a few theories on how that happened, but you know, that's maybe a little bit of a different story. But the point is, right now, there's huge efforts to reduce costs to that bare minimum where possible. At the same time, what we see is that a lot of companies, operators specifically in the hotel environment, you know, they need to sharpen their product because there's such a glut of brands, you know. So everywhere you look, I mean, we had the subject a little bit earlier, but everywhere you look, you know, it's become more difficult to distinguish between brands.
Mm-hmm.
Brands of the same operator, major operator, you know, brands of, you know, different major operators, because everybody's competing in the same space.
Level.
You know? If you look at it, brand tiers, and you take it across and you look at sort of the major 6-7 operators, you will discover that in each of those tiers, you know, every one of them by now has multiple products, basically, you know. And yes, oftentimes that makes a lot of sense because a specific product will, you know, work better in a specific market, right? But sometimes these products are more or less next door, you know, and you're like, well, you know, I don't know what the difference is. You know, I can tell you that sometimes I have to go back out and look, you know, whether mm-hmm. I went into the right door. So those two things happen at the same time, you know, so the cost pressure and the pressure to differentiate your brand. And that makes life, you know, pretty difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Not not only for us, but also I think for the brand people specifically and because they need to find the differentiator. You know, they need to define those things that are actually going to make a difference in the perception of the guest, you know. Increasingly that's very difficult. And you know, we read a lot of brand briefs because we, you know, work for different operators, different brands with different operators. And you do see that, you know, increasingly the language is quite interchangeable. Mm-hmm. You know, and so when you read these things and you read through different operators, different brands, and you start finding the same semantics and vocabulary, you start wondering, you know, so what's making the difference here, you know?
So it's not the rules or the quality that's been lost or that we're losing.
No,
it's more like the individual creativity or...
No, I think that comes on top of it. You know, like I said, I think the differentiator conundrum is one thing, is one layer. And another layer is that needs to happen while, you know, you need to save cost, right? And
something is lost on track there.
In some markets. And this is, you know, what we're talking about right now is not something that can be sort of extrapolated, you know, around the globe. But I think certainly in this particular market and in most markets in Western Europe, you know, that's the case right now, you know. So what you see as one of the solutions, my opinion, as one of the solutions is that, you know, increasingly the operators push soft brands, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the collections, they all have them, right? It's like the handwritten collection, the unbound collection, the luxury collection, the
urban
collection, you know? So everybody has these collections and it makes a lot of sense because it allows the brands to go in and basically... bring properties under their umbrella with a decreased demand for the owners to comply with certain rules. I mean, they still have to comply with certain rules and certain standards, but it's just the set of those rules and standards is smaller. So the process of conversion is much quicker. So there's a quicker access to additional rooms, right? Room growth. And the cost is lower, and the times that are being afforded to these property owners is usually, you know, a little bit longer, so the transition is easier for them. So it makes a lot of sense, you know. But at the same time, I think there's obviously also a danger, really, at some point, you know, that you're going to look at these things, especially in that segment, and you say, well, you know, what kind of collection is that now?
Mm.
You know what I mean? And where the people who benefit from this really the most, you know, are people who are part of the loyalty programs of the of the individual operators, which again also makes sense because obviously everyone is eager to grow that particular group of guests because these are the guests that, you know, are most loyal, right? And you can cater to best, and probably, I don't know the numbers exactly, but probably have a higher average spend, you know, per property and all of those things, you know. So it does make sense for the operator to focus on that, you know. So, and that's what's happening.
So do you think that these hotels will always stay under the umbrella of the collection, or do they will be integrated in the brand portfolio? What's the plan behind?
They are integrated in the brand portfolio, but as a collection.
As part of the collection, yeah.
And I think, yeah, they'll stay that way because...
What makes it very individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they stay individual.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the idea behind. Okay.
Exactly. And there's a race for that, right? There's a race for individuality, which is also interesting.
Quite nice.
It's nice, but it's also interesting because you do have that dichotomy, you know, that you have the large known brands.
Same as with Starbucks, I think. They also
And at the same number time, two and... you want to project that, you know, you offer a lot of sort of individual experiences. Mm. And so it's interesting to see how that plays out, you know. Mm. And it does actually lend itself to some very, very meaningful and very interesting conversations. So I think also on the operator side, and also obviously sometimes on the owner side, asset management side, you know, there are some interesting, very, very interesting thought processes that have developed, and there's some very, very meaningful conversations mm-hmm. about where things are going. And it's no longer a sort of very clear cut thing oftentimes, mm-hmm. you know, where you say, okay, well, this is, you know, brand XYZ, let's sit down and do that. You know, even if it's a very, you know, elevated brand with something that has a lot of individuality to it, I think now there's a much more stringent analysis process, you know, relating to each individual property of each individual brand, mm. right? And that, in my mind, you know, that's very interesting, and that really... you know, makes it worthwhile engaging in these things right now. Mm-hmm. It's good.
What do you think about the individual hotels that are not part of such a collection? So that they stay part of family, or how do you see the market for them? Or
I like the question.
It's interesting because I think obviously, you know, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, also France, Belgium, Netherlands, you know, there's a huge number of unbranded hotels, huge, gigantic mm. number, and those are the hunting grounds in some ways, you know, for the soft brands. Basically, you know, they go around, people go around, and they discover, you know, properties that are exceptionally well kept, or, you know, have a very strong concept and very loyal following, you know, and those properties get approached, you know, so I think that's one category. There's another category of places that, you know, oftentimes have a very long history. So they've been in particular families, you know, for a long period of time. And they're in some incredibly beautiful settings, you know. I mean, I haven't often traveled in Germany. This year I have, it's taken me some places that I would have never gone if I didn't have a reason to. And you discover these things, and you just by the roadside, you know, you oftentimes see these places and you're like, oh, that's very interesting. You know, that could be great. Unfortunately, it's not.
Why?
Well, because the quality, I mean, it's...
A lot of times the shell is great and the inside is... not great.
Yeah. Also, I think obviously it's a lack of funds. You know, I mean, it's because it really takes a lot of money to especially if they're, you know, historic properties or you know, things that maybe where there's recently been a change in ownership. You know, one generation to the next, the older generation might have, you know, just ridden it out to some point, and now you really need to do something. Mm. The younger generation has taken it over, and they're trying, but it's, you know, they just don't have the funds for it, you know. But oftentimes, I think it's also a little bit of a not understanding fully, like, what the potential is that is in it, you know. So the people are, I think, oftentimes very much focused on the local market and whatever market has sort of come to them over time. You know, oftentimes they have a gigantic percentage of repeat guests, you know, like 90 or 95% of guests that come every year, right? And they, to some degree, expect to see what they've seen the last year, you know. And some of these places are really afraid of making changes because they think they're going to alienate a lot of the people that have come to them for many years, you know. So they...
Yeah, but I think they also forget that their guests are maybe turning too old at some point.
They do, but it's still...
So they need to focus on a younger generation
that's true,
guests.
But it's a big step. And we've done properties like this before, you know, where we were very much part of the conversation within the family. You know, how far should we go? You know, how far should we push this? Or can we push this? You know, what is it that we want to achieve, really? You know, do we want to have...
And focus communication.
Yeah. Do we want to, like, develop this and become something new?
Mm-hmm.
you know, open ourselves up to a new customer base.
Not too new.
And some people will, you know, sort of fall on that end. Others, not so much. You know, they're too afraid of it, or they just don't see where their customer base should be coming from. They don't know where to market for it, all of those things. Oftentimes, they also really don't have access to, let's say, you know, the know-how or the skill set or the suppliers or whatever the case might be, you know, so they're stuck. I mean, stuck, but they're used to also within their locale, sort of, you know, deal with the suppliers that are there. They go to the tile guy, Mr. Schmidt, you know, who he's done the tiles for 50 years, right? They go to the electrician who's always done the electrical work. They go to the lighting, right? Big mistake. And and they go to, you know, the local mill worker, you know, who's always done all the closets and all of this stuff, you know. So, but these people, they also most of the time, not always, but always, you know, most of the time, they also don't have, you know, the bandwidth really, you know, or the vision that they will go back to the customer and say, well, listen, why don't you try something new? Because they're oftentimes not exposed to how successful that might be, you know? So I think it's a combination of factors. But I think there is a real, there's a potential for a real moment because, you know, what I think we see is, you know, obviously that went through the press that there's a coming backlash in major tourist locations in terms of, you know, how many visitors, how many tourists they're willing to accept at a given time. And this might be a little bit overhyped right now, but I think in general, this is something that is
leisure going locations.
To happen. Yeah. I think that is something that's going to happen because, you know, a set number of places attract an ever-growing number of tourists, right? I mean, there's this thing out there. I don't know exactly what the number is, but it's some gigantic number. Like, you know, if the entire Indian middle class were to start traveling like we do, or like the European middle class already travels, you know, every place would be overrun every time of the year with like hundreds of thousands, millions of people. And that's just India. You know, I mean, there's many other places in Africa and other places that are developing sizable middle classes very quickly. And if all of these people start traveling to the same places that everybody's already been traveling to, those places at some point will say, you know what, that's it. We're done here. You know, you either bring your own water or you're not coming.
Mm.
Right. So if you just take that as a development, I think there's a likelihood that in the vicinity or you know, further and larger vicinity of these major spots, people will look elsewhere. You know, they will go and they will say, look, oh, the countryside is still very nice. You know, it's not that major spot within the countryside. But why don't we, you know, travel around a little bit? And then they discover these places, you know. And that's another thing anyway that's, I think, a big trend is like people go and discover. You know, they obviously with the internet and all the information that's available and you know, all kinds of guides and people who, you know, influencers and so forth that do that for people, you know, they roam the countryside basically and say, oh, look, you know, there's a place over here. Let's go, you know, and then they go in and they check in and they do a, I don't know, like a 5-minute video, right? And somebody sees it and they're like, that's great. You know, why have
I want to go there too.
So all of a sudden, next thing you know, you have 25 buses in front of your door, right? And you're like, oh.
Well, what kind of chain reaction do you want, you know? Right?
No, but so I'm saying that these places, I think, have the ability or the prospect of seeing a lot more business, you know? And also what's happening, I just read an article recently. Hyatt, for example, has decidedly go into sort of second tier locations, you know, so to not only invest into growing their presence in A spots, but, you know, decidedly go into B spots because they see the same trend, basically, you know. And I think it's only natural once one of the big guys starts, you know, the other ones, if they're not already doing it and they're just not promoting it that way, you know.
Or they're waiting for someone to be the first one to not make the mistakes you do as a first one. Because as a second one, you will not do the same mistakes.
Well, or they've just been under the radar a little bit, you know. So it's like I said, you know, it's already happened, and you see, you know, places, for example, in Poland. You know, I've spent a little bit of time dealing with Poland, which I find super interesting, and there you see a lot of places that have quite sizable development. In from a hotel perspective, that at least me outside of the market had really never heard of, you know, and the same to some degree is true in Romania and some other, and the Balkans, also some other places, where these people are just, you know, the beautiful places, they're just building hotels, you know, and I think here a lot of those places have hotels, they're family owned. And these people are faced now increasingly, I think will be faced with the choice of, do I become part of some network, some collection, or romantic hotels, or, you know, play, you know, organizations like that? Or are we doing it independently? But they will see that the market increasingly will be there. And with the market being there, the rationale will change, you know. Now, if with those two things, at some point, also the attitude of the banks will change, you know, then I think you might see some real development there, right? Obviously, right now, those conditions remain difficult. But yeah, I think that's the interest right now.
Some good stuff is being born in our conversation.
Happy to hear that there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
I think there's a lot of light.
A lot of light.
Light. Another nice topic to talk to you about.
Yeah, it's just that the tunnel got a lot longer, you know?
You always see the light. It just depends on when you get there.
Absolutely, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Depends on your glasses.
Yeah. And how long you have to travel, you know? You might run into the night before it gets day again, but, you know, it's different.
Talking about light at the end of the tunnel, I think working with you takes you to the light a lot quicker than a long tunnel. I always say it's the most wonderful dependency there is between interior design and lighting. What's your point of view?
Yeah, no, I mean, one does not exist without the other.
Right.
I mean,
that's the most wonderful dependency. That
right. I mean, that's a fundamental.
They only coexist.
Right. That's a fundamental truth, right? And you know, you can shape one with the other. You know, we're a very visually oriented species. So, you know, what light does to how we perceive things is obviously of paramount importance in any spatial context, and also in you know, providing an emotional response to an environment. So those are things that are just you know, as I said, fundamental truths. So dealing with that and giving it, calibrating those two things together so they actually interreact and reinforce each other in whichever the you know, environment is that you're looking to define is from my perspective the most critical component of you know, certainly, I mean, spatial design generally, but particularly in the hospitality environment, for sure. Right. And you know, I never tire of saying that. I don't think that adequate attention is paid to that. I mean, a lot, again, it's another one of those subjects where a lot of people think they're, you know, already paying way too much money for it. You know, why should they be paying more money for it? Again, it's not a question of money. It's predominantly a question of understanding, you know, why you need it and what it is doing for you, then, you know, funneling the adequate sort of funds in that direction, basically, right? But from my perspective and experience, it is I think I've said that before somewhere. It is, you know, the best investment that you will ever make.
To underline your concept.
Yeah, to underline the concept, but also to sort of, you know, provide longevity.
Human well-being.
Yeah, but also to provide longevity in a lot of ways, you know, because and to that extent, I think that, you know, working with these concepts that, you know, provide a level of flexibility is important. And I certainly have my approach to this, which I'm not saying is the one that everybody should have, but
that's yours. Nobody should have that.
I mean, it's worked in our context, but I think it's worthwhile, you know, a very thorough thought process, what the right approach is in a given scenario. And I think, or I see, we see in the projects that we do or the projects that we know about, that oftentimes that is not the case. You know, it's oftentimes very much a knee-jerk reaction to, you know, this way or that way, you know. I think it would be great if that continued to change. It does change, but again, too often you still see these things, and you go into these places and you're like, what happened? You know, why? Right? And it could have been solved with like the same amount of money. Like, again, it's not a question of money. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of paying attention at the right time and understanding what that investment might do for you. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's lighting as lighting control. Lighting control is a huge component of this. Also there, you know, it's increasingly sort of a predicament, you know, because the technology is there and it can work beautifully. The reality is in many, many, many cases, it does not work beautifully, you know, and there's many, many, many issues.
Yeah.
And in many cases, people get very frustrated with this, you know. So what do? They get rid of it, or they reduce it to a minimum because it's complex. And
yeah, or don't pay attention at all.
But often, I mean, I see more of people actually being frustrated with the fact that they spend a lot of money on it and it doesn't work the way either they thought it was going to work or that it needs to
the
work.
Way it should.
And oftentimes these things are not a technological question. So they're not a question of, can the system actually do this? They're, you know, a question of, did the people who installed the system understand what it was supposed to do?
Yeah.
And oftentimes they don't, you know.
We experience that a lot. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And then, you know, and so then, you know, we end up being in our role, you know, we end up being at a given project site or whatever the case might be. And we start discovering, you know what, this doesn't work. This doesn't, you know, these light fixtures or whatever, you know, they're not grouped together the way they're supposed to be grouped together. Or, you know, they don't dim as they're supposed to dim, you know, because somebody decided to not buy, you know, the specified light bulb. You know, LED retrofit light bulb that happens to dim to like whatever 5% or 1% or whatever it is, because it would have cost 50 cent more. So there's a snowballing effect of these decisions that are being made where people don't really understand what they're doing and what they're upending, you know, with their decision, because all of a sudden, because of that 50 cent decision that somebody made way down the line, the, you know, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 system or euro system that you installed does not work properly anymore. So it's not the 50 cent, it's the 80,000 you already spent that have now gone down the drain, you know? So, and these things, this interrelationship of like spiraling and snowballing costs and deficiencies, that is very unique, you know, to lighting control or building control, but lighting control in particular, you know? There's it's, you know, huge amount of frustration out in the market, and when we come to the table and we basically say, look, we need this, you know, must be, and then oftentimes we'll go and maybe recommend a specific manufacturer, for example, you know, the answer that you get is from some installer or some consultant. Don't worry about it. We got this. You know, we understand this. We've been installing these systems for 20 years. All right.
Well, if you hear that.
I mean, it's fine. You know, who am I to say you don't know what you're doing? I mean, I'll tell them anyway, but the point is...
yeah, you will. Yeah. So I've known you long enough to know that.
Because usually they don't. But the point is, you need, at that point, you need to be, you know, clear about what the requirements are. You know, what are the features of the system that you need to work later? And once you've given them that, and they'll set out, you know, doing their magic. And then at the end of the day, it doesn't work out. You still have the same problem. It doesn't work out. The problem with these systems is they're so complex. And when they get installed, you have no way of really testing them. You will only find out when the whole thing is done and you're 2 days before opening. Because that's when, you know, a stupid idiot like me jumps around the project site and tries to, you know, do whatever they think they can be doing. And everybody on the client side rightfully expects that these things will be perfect. That's what they're paying me for, right, for example. All you can do is like run around, shrug your shoulders basically and say, well, you know what? It was supposed to work like this, but it really doesn't. No, you can't postpone your opening, right? It's difficult to explain to people once they're in the door that that chandelier over there was supposed to be lit right now, but unfortunately it's not. Or that piece of art over there, you know, unfortunately cannot be lit because the group of fixtures over there, you know, whatever, cannot be aimed properly or whatever the case might be, you know, because they didn't coordinate properly with the drywall. And you know, there's so many things about this where the people, when they're doing it, don't have a clear understanding what is critical and important about the installation, both on the actual physical hardware installation as well as the software or the programming bit of the installation. And you cannot, like I said, you cannot easily verify these things until the moment that they're actually needed and it's showtime. And that has a lot to do with, you know, how projects work and how they progress and the fact that, you know, every project site will have work being done in it almost until the last minute, which is just the way it is. A furniture being delivered, you know, walls still being painted, all kinds of stuff, right? From a final lighting setup, that is the last thing that will happen. The very last thing that will happen, you know? Like all the artwork needs to be installed. All the accessories need to be in place. I need to know where every piece of whatever equipment is and how it's being handled there. You know, is there going to be a lit screen to the POS or not? All of those things need to be there and in place so you can do your final setup. And that moment just does not arrive, you know, until 5 minutes before the doors fly open. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we try to tell our clients, look, you need to allocate, you know, appropriate amounts of time for this to happen. You know, so we need certain things in place and we need to do this in waves. You know, we need to go in and do sort of a rough focus and to the extent that is possible, you know, see that the system works. You know, we don't need to program, but we need to see that the system works. And you, client, please need to make sure that your contractor understands that and they need to allocate the personnel and the time to do this.
Well, and additionally, the usability should be easy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the staff
and the guest.
That's yet another layer that's also problematic. But yes, but once the system actually works, you can always break it. In my experience, you can break it down to
good usability.
Let's say reduced complexity so that the property can actually use it. And the people on the property oftentimes, you know, they're actually quite capable. When you're in that position, you know, you might actually find someone who's had a lot of experience with that. And that's great. But to get to the point where they can actually take it over and use it and not do something and not know whether that's a malfunction or whether that's actually supposed to be that way, because the property people have no idea. They weren't part of the design process, you know?
Yeah.
So this really all needs to be part of the final setup of the property. And it's a lengthy iterative process that very rarely, if ever, happens in one shot. You know, oftentimes the people expect that, okay, fine, now we're all done, you know, get the lighting guy in, let him do his thing, and then, you know, in a couple of hours he's done. Well,
yeah,
it's not like that, you know. And like I said, you know, we try to make it a point. Does it help? No. Because at the end of the day, like I said, you know, you will be the last guy running around and you know, being in people's way because they're doing, you know, operational training, or there might even be already, you know, friends and family guests, or, you know, what have you, you know. So that all of those things are a challenge, you know. And then, I've been doing this for many, 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 many years now, in many different locations. And it's nowhere does it work well, but I have not seen it fail in quite the same way that I have here anywhere else in the world. And I think that is a function of a lot of people technically thinking they know how to put the best possible system together,
yeah,
without understanding what the purpose of the system is,
yeah,
you know? And it's, I find it incredibly difficult in this environment oftentimes to have these conversations, because, you know, people are very attached or, you know, proud to their particular set of knowledge that they've, you know, accumulated in a particular way. You know, contractors are have a very particular way of looking at their responsibilities and what it is that they have to deliver versus what would constitute sort of an extra, you know, a charge or extra service or whatever the case might be. So because we've learned this over time in this particular market, this is why we go in the beginning and try to really, you know, account for this extra time that these people need to spend. And oftentimes what we hear, you know, this is also unfortunate, an unfortunate truth, but it is a truth, is that the contractors will say, well, look, you know, our people are going to be available from, I don't know, 8 a.m. to 4. The hotel operates 24 hours. I cannot, you know, dim for a night scene at 4 p.m.
In winter, you can.
No, it's, no.
In Berlin, you can start in 2 p.m.
Yeah. So, but no, it's not possible, you know? So, and so already there is very difficult. Yeah. You know, I mean, they extra allowances have to be made. And, you know, these people are like, well, you know, we're not going to have the people available for this, yeah, you know, because all of our people live 50 miles away and they have to drive there. And of course, blah, 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 you know. So and it's these types of things that where you really see, it sounds irrational, but, you know, really see some of these projects fall apart at because of these things. And that's something I still, for me, with the experience we've had, you know, prior to working in Germany, is, to me, that's mind-boggling. Like, I don't get it. I really don't get it. You know, and I don't understand. I refuse to accept that, you know. So, and oftentimes, you know, that becomes a quite interesting discussion. But it's a necessity. It must be done. It must be available, you know. So you cannot, for example, also on the subject of control systems and dimming and so forth, you cannot go through these sites, for example, without having an electrician available. It's not possible because you might run into some technical problem and that needs to be solved. And if you don't solve it, you know, you cannot complete what you're there to complete. Yeah, but, you know, the electrician was not available. We couldn't schedule him. Why? Like, how is that
then
possible?
Find
that
someone who can.
Exactly. Yeah. Go and find someone and get these people in here because they have a contract with you, right? But that's a reality here. And oftentimes, you know, I do think that a lot of the things where I said in the beginning, you know, you walk into these properties and they're spanking brand new properties, and everything is beautiful. And but you look at the light and or everything could be beautiful, but the way it's lit, it's just a complete shambles. You know, everything is super flat and whatever materials they selected and chose don't come out at all. You know, they're just being washed out. And so you look and you think, well, what happened? And then you remember and you say, well, you know, I think some of that has to do with the fact that at some point the electricians or somebody just decided, you know what, we just don't, I don't have the time to deal with this. So let me just do this. Right? And some owner, obviously, I mean, you can't expect the owners to have oftentimes to have that particular experience or to have the knowledge about these things. And oftentimes, obviously, they will, and now we're back to the very beginning of what we spoke about, you know, they will look at this from a cost perspective. You know, and if somebody comes along and says, oh, look, you know, the designer wants this thing, is very fancy, you know, costs 150 euros per fixture, you know, I can get you the same thing for like 10 euros. Well, owner, you know, takes two pictures, looks at it and basically says, you know what? Yeah, it looks exactly the same. Let's go with that.
Can't be the same.
Yeah, no, I mean, whatever. But you just like, and then, of course, it doesn't get back to you in oftentimes, sometimes it does, oftentimes it doesn't, you know, until they've actually installed it. Because I don't rummage around in the electrical contractor's, you know, sort of a closet there to see what kind of fixtures he's actually going to install. So, you know, then you end up with these things, right? And then you see and you turn them on and you're like, that doesn't.
No.
No. Yeah, no. But at that point, it's too late. And nobody is going to rip out the entire ceiling again, you know, to change out all those fixtures because opening day is tomorrow. And once the property is open, we're not going to do that anymore because now we got to make the money back that we invested, which is all understandable, you know. But it's just that particular moment where sometimes people really just don't pay attention. I mean, it's not fully understood what the decisions that are oftentimes being made at that level actually will entail at a later point. And, you know, it used to be a little bit different when the technology was more forgiving, right? So when you had lighting systems that were based on, you know, halogen lamps and or interchangeable light sources to begin with, you know, so it was very easy. You went and you were able to change out a light bulb, you know, quote unquote, right? And you say, well, you know, this doesn't do what I needed to do. So you come with your different halogen lamp and, you know, you put it in and it has a different beam spread and, you know, blah. And color wasn't a problem anyway because, you know, everything had a CRI of, you know, 95 plus because of halogen, right? So those were great times for lighting people, you know, because you had a lot of flexibility with, from a fixture perspective, oftentimes, you know, very low cost because these things, you know, did a lot of different things or were able to do a lot of different things. And you still had flexibility. Today, that's all very different, you know, because you have very dedicated sources, right? Everything is LED and must be LED, right? So, but the LED light sources are not particularly flexible. You know, today you get them in, you know, whatever, you know, dynamic white or, you know, there's all kinds of names for basically a light source that is able
to. Yeah, but still working with it is totally different than it was.
Right. To transition between different, you know, light sources or color temperatures.
Yeah.
And that's great. But as with all flexibility that's built into these things, somebody is going to start playing around with it at some point, you know, and then you lose oftentimes in reality, you lose the composition at the end of the day because somebody decided, you know what, also looks good if it's a little bit cooler, you know, but well, he didn't happen to turn around and look behind him where everything is not the same color temperature, you know,
yeah.
So you end up having this hodgepodge of things. So, but anyway, so that's a technological development that actually has put more pressure on the design side of these systems because you need to be that much more specific about, you know, what type of light source and light fixture by which manufacturer oftentimes you will actually need to use in a particular application. And if that gets changed for whatever reason, at a later point, it will have ramifications. And again, those ramifications, oftentimes within the process of a project, are not fully understood at the given moment. And later, it turns out people have forgotten about it or whatever the case might be. And when you discover what the problem actually is, the cost of resolving the problem oftentimes is astronomical, because you need to start changing furniture. You know, you need to like break open things to find drivers or transformers or whatever. You need to, you know, change out light fixtures. Like one will have, you know, you need a hole that's like 40 mil, but that they've installed. But now the fixture that you can actually get now has 30 mil. So now what are you going to do? You know, you have a hole that's too big. You need to change a piece of furniture. So, or you need to, you know, cut new holes in the ceiling. And often, let's say you have an acoustic ceiling or something like that, you know, it's not possible. So the workarounds that you need to find, plus you have a running operation by that time, you know, that makes money. So every time you need to shut something down, it's going to cost you money, right? So the costs that are accumulating to save this stuff or rectify it later oftentimes are prohibitive. So what happens? The thing doesn't get changed. And everybody just gets used to the fact that, you know what, yeah, could have been better. Unfortunately, it's not. You know, let's push it off to 10 years from now. We do the next renovation. You know, so it's frustrating oftentimes.
Yeah, I think we're kind of at the end of our tunnel, in the middle of the light.
Of course, it's
Ronald.
Very inspiring. Yeah, you know, listening to you.
But the learning is not should have, could have. Pay attention, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, pay attention. Absolutely. Pay attention, hire good people. And, you know, again, there's a reason why certain things have a different price tag than other.
Mm.
That's also a fact. You know, try to understand fully why something is there.
And ask.
If you don't understand, ask.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
So we'll be back for another episode.
Please.
For
anytime.
Sure.
We will.
Perhaps in one of these small hotels.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the countryside.
See.
Let's
see.
See.
If we find
really
one.
Like the idea.
Absolutely. Yeah, if we find
That'd
one.
That'd be really nice.
That'd be a great thing. Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's do this.
Real gems out there, man.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
A lot of potential.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you, guys. Thanks for coming
Thank
by.
Thank you.
Thank you very All much right. for your time.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Bye.